Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's only me and I walk alone.
Good morning, 610 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. President Trump is looking to denaturalize some citizens. This was the most interesting story to me from last week, because my first reaction, I don't know what your reaction was, but I know my first reaction was the what now? You know, my first reaction was, what do you mean denaturalize? Because in my mind, naturalization is very similar philosophically to adoption. That's how I think of it, okay? You know, if somebody is your natural born child, they're your kid. You know, you got a really, I mean, disowning a kid is a massive thing, right? That's a very complicated, difficult. Okay, and still you're their parents, right? Well, adoption, once it's done, it's done. You are forever the kid of those people, right? And, you know, I'm a religious person, and the Bible, the themes of natural born and adoption are very strong, and, you know, anybody who confesses Jesus is adopted into the family, you know, grafted into the branch of the Jews, you know, is kind of the way we talk about it. But so that's how I think of citizenship, kind of once for always. Well, it turns out that is not the case. Now, the details here really matter. Okay, but the Trump administration has said that they are looking to denaturalize anybody who would be eligible for denaturalization, to have their citizenship stripped from them. And your natural first question is, if you're like me, your first question is, how is that even possible? Under what circumstances? Well, there's actually several. Went and looked it up, and I read a fairly interesting paper, 27-page paper. It was a long single space, a lot of information. But it was really interesting because it said there's actually four different basic ways you can lose your citizenship if you're a naturalized citizen. One is through, actually five. The applicant, here, I'm giving you the conditions. The applicant was a lawful permanent resident of the United States for the 5 years or 3 years of applying as a spouse. So you have to be here for five, or if you're married, three, of a United States citizen. Immediately preceding the date of the filing and up to the date of naturalization. So you can fail that. Like, if you were not actually a lawful resident for 3 years or 5 years. If you were out of the country for too much of that time, you can lose it. Okay? Like, you weren't really eligible is what that means. Two, they were a person of good moral character during all of the 5 or 3 year period. You what? Yeah, you have to be a person of good moral character. Now, that's a really squishy term, right? Good moral character. Well, okay, there's details. They didn't write a law and then leave no teeth to it, no details. I'll come back to that one. They were physically present in the U.S. for at least half of the 5 or 3 year period. They resided continuously in the U.S. as a lawful permanent resident for the 5 year period or 3 year, immediately preceding the date of filing up to the time of naturalization. And five, during the 3 or 5 year period was, this is also an interesting one, quote, attached to the principles of the Constitution of the United States and well disposed to the good order and happiness of the United States. A good citizen in practice, a good citizen in training. You have to be, again, the quote, attached to the principles of the Constitution of the United States and well disposed to the good order and happiness of the United States. So how do you lose your citizenship? Well, one of the primary ways is if you lie on your citizenship application. If you misrepresent key facts about yourself and you acquired citizenship through fraud, then you can have your citizenship stricken away. Like, for instance, if you lie about your name and you pretend to be a different person, do identities ever get mixed up in immigration cases or in illegal border crossing cases? Of course, all the time, right? So you lie on your application, you pretend to be somebody else. Why would you lie? Well, because, you know, real you has legal history, convictions, crimes. So you take on a different name. Perhaps a name of a real person, perhaps a name of nobody, but you take on a different name. You pretend to be that person for a while, and eventually, you know, you get citizenship, and they discover, oh, whoa, wait a minute. You're actually this other person that's got a criminal history. You lied. You can have your citizenship revoked. Interestingly, if you become a citizen under false pretenses, which, by the way, is a lot like annulment in the Catholic Church, and a lot of Protestants don't understand annulment, but you know what annulment is? Annulment is not a divorce. An annulment is saying you were never married. It's a weird concept, but the premise is typically the reasons for annulment, at least theoretically, are supposed to be you entered into the marriage fraudulently. You lied real obvious case would be if you're already married. That's bigamy. You know, you can't be married a second time. Well, you weren't ever really second married. You were married once and then you had a fraud. Okay. It's kind of like that. If you discover that the citizenship was on the basis of fraudulent information, you can have it revoked. Interestingly, if you are a citizen and then somebody marries you and gets their citizenship because you're a citizen, but yours got revoked because you were never a citizen, what happens to your spouse? John, you want to take a guess?
They're out of here.
They lose it too. Yeah. That's right. So if you marry a fraud, you can lose yours too. A child. Now, children born here, which of course is in dispute right now, but you know, somebody born here has got it for being born here. But let's say you're Mexican, okay, and you come and you lie about who you are, and you have a spouse who is not you shouldn't be a citizen and they shouldn't be a citizen. And one of your trips back home, you can come and go during the 5-year period, but let's say you've gone back home and you give birth back in Mexico to a child. Well, if you were a citizen, they're a citizen, even though they're born on foreign soil, right? Unless you were fraudulently a citizen, they lose their citizenship too. There's a cascade of defraud, essentially, of undoing the fraud. Now, that's not the only part. There's more to this, but I was just fascinated to read about it because the history of why we have some of this is very interesting. Anyway, we'll come back to this after the break. 6:16 on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the sixes.
You go, okay.
Sorry.
Brought to you by ECUA Bulk Waste Services. Now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Still rolling accident-free right now. Looks like I-10, I-110, 90, 98 are all flowing smoothly. Seeing some minor delays if you're on Davis Highway approaching Olive Road southbound, so just be aware of that, but that's normal congestion. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives. The history of the Blues is presented by Calvert's in the Heights.
Flying the A4 Skyhawks in 1981, the Blue Angels celebrated their 35th anniversary. It was hoped that this milestone would be commemorated with a Blue Angels postage stamp. An effort to get a postage stamp featuring the Blue Angels had been underway for many years. Though this effort was repeatedly turned down by the Postal Commission, in 1981 they did honor the Blue Angels with a stamp cancellation mark for use by post offices in two cities, Palm Springs, California, near NAS El Centro, and Pensacola, Florida, the team's home base. Also in celebration of their 35th anniversary, a star in the constellation Cephas was officially named Blue Angel Star. If you've got a very powerful telescope, you can find Blue Angel Star just beyond Polaris, the North Star, then out just a few hundred light years. Though the Blue Angels have made Pensacola their home since 1955, only one of Pensacola's native sons has ever flown as a Blue Angel pilot. His name was Mike Gershon. Mike was a 1971 graduate of Washington High School. He attended Pensacola Junior College and the University of West Florida. It was in his junior year at UWF that he was accepted into the Aviation Reserve Officer Candidate Program. He graduated from college in 1975 and was commissioned as an officer in the U.S. Navy in April of the following year. He earned his gold naval aviator's wings in May of 1977 upon completing flight training at NAS Pensacola. After 6.5 years of duty, he fulfilled a lifelong dream when he reported to the Blue Angels. But tragedy would befall Mike Gershon at an air show 22 months later. On July 13, 1985, the Blue Angels were performing a public air show in Niagara Falls, New York. the two solo jets, numbers 5 and 6, were approaching each other at a closing speed of nearly 1,000 miles per hour at the top of an opposing direction loop. In this maneuver, each jet was to pass the other with minimum separation, but they weren't far enough apart, and a mid-air collision occurred as Lieutenant Commander Mike Gershon's number 6 plane sliced off the tail of Lieutenant Andy Caputi's number 5 plane. Both jets crashed. Although Caputi managed to eject safely, Gershon was killed. He was 31 years old. I'll be back with more after this.
Are you looking for a unique restaurant experience? It's Calvert's in the Heights, a one-of-a-kind English-themed restaurant and pub with stunning views of Escambia Bay. Enjoy delicious cuisine from British fare to American bar foods to fresh home-cooked meals, or stop into the pub for a great selection of beers, liquors, and wines. You'll find it all at Calvert's. Don't miss the Red, White, and Blues Watch Party, Saturday, July 12th, 10:30 till 3. Replace the heat and traffic with cold AC and frosty drinks and the Blue Angels air show on the big screen. Calvert's in the Heights, 670 Scenic Highway.
The Blue Angels move up to the state-of-the-art FA-18 Hornet in the next chapter of News Radio's History of the Blue Angels.
When a storm is brewing, you need reliable information at your fingertips. Tune in to News Radio 92.3 for comprehensive hurricane coverage you can count on. Our team of anchors and reporters are in studio and at the County Emergency Operations Centers, bringing you live updates, safety tips, and emergency resources. From storm tracking to storm information, we've got you covered. Stay informed, stay safe. When the winds pick up, we're right there with you. News Radio 92.3, your trusted source during hurricane season.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
Yabba-dabba-doo!
Good morning, happy Monday, 6:22 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. I told you I'd tell you more about this denaturalization thing, and I will do so in just a moment. Before that, if you're looking for that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great selection of good quality used cars. Cars that are a year to maybe 4 years young. You know, you're going to be the second, maybe third driver. 10,000 to maybe 30 or 40,000 miles, really the sweet spot. Cars that are in great condition, what they call A-condition cars, you know, A, B, C, D, E, A-condition cars. That you can count on. That's why, you know, Dave Ramsey recommends them, because you avoid that first new car depreciation hit. I recommend them. We bought an Odyssey from them a few years ago that's been fantastic ever since we bought it. You know, we got it, I mean, a great price on a car that had 12 or 13,000 miles on it, was a year young. We got from basically a dealership in Orlando that, you know, had been a lease, came back. They couldn't sell it 90 days, went to auction, went to Frontier, came to us. And I mean, it's just been great quality cars. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to visit the White House today to meet with President Trump. Trump has continued to press the Israeli leader about a ceasefire agreement between the country and the Palestinian militant group Hamas. Trump has said recently that he believes a deal could happen this week. Firefighters are trying to get control of a massive wildfire in Southern California. The Madre Fire in San Luis Obispo County has charred over 80,000 acres since it broke out this last Wednesday. It's currently the largest wildfire in California. And TikTok is reportedly developing a brand new version of its social media app specifically for American customers. Of course, their parent company ByteDance have to divest of its U.S. operations to non-Chinese owners at some point, apparently, or
allegedly, theoretically. Yeah. You know, that's what we've heard. Apparently. Hasn't had to happen yet.
What are we up to? Two or three extensions now?
I don't know.
Lost track.
Yeah.
According to tech publication The Information, though, a new version of their app is set to launch in September this year.
Okay, so the new American TikTok, which will only be by the smartest, most capable, highly educated, and reliable sources, will be the TikTok content creators, right? Isn't that what the...
Yes.
And they'll all have to be members of the America Party.
Of course.
Okay, I'm just making sure, because, I mean, I'd be interested in that, as opposed to the cesspool that is TikTok right now. David, thanks so much for the update. 625, John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Seen some minor delays on Highway 90 as you approach, Pace area. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
You know, I say cesspool, which, you know, you might think that's a little bit strong. Well, you know, I thought Twitter was bad. Until I saw TikTok. You know.
True.
I thought where lunacy has its loudest voice. And by the way, I mean, I think Twitter also has a lot of good things. But, you know, it's a lot of not good. And then I saw some TikTok and I thought, I don't know. Okay, where was I? Oh, we're talking about the denaturalization. And, you know, like a good professor in me wants to finish the subject. And so... there are ways to lose your citizenship if you're naturalized. And again, I did not know that. John, you did not know that. I think all of us
were caught
surprised by this. Which, by the way, just as a FYI, Obama had a policy pursuing denaturalization called Operation Janus. Did you know that?
No.
Same?
Didn't know it.
President Trump the first, 45.
The first.
Is it wrong to call him President Trump the first and the second? Yes. Leans a little too much into the King narrative.
Exactly.
I don't know. Is it that wrong? Anyway, the 45th?
Mm-hmm.
There's about not been 45. Anyway, back to the point. Under the first administration, in fact, this very good brief from the National Immigration Project, the ILRC, had on this was saying that, you know, going back to 2016, there were, you wonder how many people had fraudulently gotten citizenship. They identified 1,000 such cases, which is not that many, but it's not zero. They identified, DHS identified another 953 cases of naturalized citizens with prior deportation orders under other identities, which would be fraudulent, right? Fingerprint records lacking in approximately 315,000 cases to make sure that it's the right person. So this is not a trivial number of people. Anyway, they had pursued this under the first Trump administration and also under the Obama administration. The Supreme Court had its say and basically cut the number of denaturalizations way down. Because they had a ruling which essentially found that, you know, you have to really find extraordinary cases. They have to have willfully committed fraud or misrepresentation. But you have things like this was intended originally, for example, to prevent a Nazi collaborator from acquiring citizenship and us not being able to do anything about it after the fact. Or communists, like in the 50s or 60s. You know, politically driven denaturalization was hot and heavy in the 50s and 60s, and then it kind of fell off in the 60s because of the Supreme Court ruling. But it was long used throughout the 20th century to basically strip citizenship from enemies of the government. What Trump's saying now is cartel members, gang members, which actually fits if you have been, you know, not good moral character for the 5 years prior to you getting your citizenship. You can lose it if you engaged in armed combat against the United States, kind of a rare one, okay, but you can lose it. But basically, if you conceal a material fact, if you are convicted for naturalization fraud, if you were discharged under other than honorable conditions within, like, if you got your citizenship because you were in the military, but you got discharged not, you know, honorably, you can lose it, okay? And this is kind of an odd one, but if you refuse to testify before congressional committees on alleged subversive activities for up to 10 years after you get your citizenship, you can lose it. So there's all kinds of ways. And now part of the squishy part of this is the definition of good moral character and loyalty to the constitutional principles and all of that. But again, I was surprised. I didn't know you could lose it. And so I went to research and I found that there's lots of reasons you can lose it. And now, is the Trump administration going to be trying to strip citizenship from just everybody? It does not look like that's the case. if they're trying to find people who fraudulently acquired it, people who shouldn't have had it in the first place, that's good, but that's going to be very expensive to do. By the way, it's a civil proceeding. You're not entitled to a lawyer to defend you if you're targeted in this kind of thing. Now, if they're specifically going after people who are gang members, I mean, of course, right? Sure, no problem. Don't just deport, but strip of citizenship, both, right? That makes sense to me. And that's actually within the law. So anyway, it's a, like I said, I learned a lot researching it. I thought it was surprising. It was not something I had been aware of. And when you, and especially because, did you know Obama did it? Did you know that presidents going back to the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and 70s did it? Now, the cases dropped dramatically from, I think the number was in the upper hundreds thousand kind of vicinity, maybe a couple thousand, down to like less than 50 a year. But this is, again, under Obama, this is not a, you know, and prior to that, you know, a long time also, this is not a non-zero number. So it's not a brand new thing. It's just that Trump is using something that has been there and is in the law, and is in the law for reasons. So we'll see what actually develops. Oh, hey, cool story coming up on the history of the Goodyear blimp.
I'm Gianna Gelosi. At least 82 people are dead and dozens still missing after catastrophic flash flooding in central Texas.
Intense rain started before sunrise on July 4th, causing the river to rise about 26 feet in less than an hour, giving people very little time to realize just how dangerous the situation was becoming.
Fox's Rebecca Castor. Now officials are bracing for the possibility of more downpours today.
We're not going to see the torrential rainfall that we saw over the weekend, but we still have flood alerts in these areas because it's not going to take much to add to the problems in this region.
That's Fox meteorologist Janice Dean. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in Washington this morning expecting to meet with President Trump as the White House continues to push for a ceasefire deal in Gaza. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3, 73 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies and an absolutely beautiful morning here in Pensacola. Fire officials investigating what may be a suspicious fire in Bratt last week. A home was declared a total loss after a fire Friday. Investigators say the house was vacant, but they're now looking into whether the house may have been occupied by squatters before the fire. ECFR firefighters from Walnut Hill, McDavid, Molino, and Century fire stations responded. They were aided by firefighters from Atmore. Last week, Florida's Alligator Alcatraz opened its doors to federal immigration detainees. The Everglades facility started booking inmates last Wednesday following a tour by President Trump and Governor Ron DeSantis. Shortly after, plans for a second facility at a National Guard base in Northeast Florida were announced. Now there's some hints about a possible third facility, which could be located in the Panhandle. The previous facility has been built at existing buildings that had access to military airfields and airports. There are numerous options that could fit that bill between Pensacola and Panama City. So far, though, there's no word on any potential sites for that thing. A Pensacola man facing a homicide charge after allegedly shooting and killing his father over a broken TV Saturday. 27-year-old O'Neill Robert Matthew Thompson was arrested following the incident between Lakewood Road and Alba Plena Street Saturday. Investigators say the father and son were in a heated dispute when a third person attempted to intervene. During the altercation, Thompson reportedly pulled a gun and shot his father, who later died of his injuries. Thompson now remains in the Escambia County Jail with no bond. Well, as Texas continues dealing with devastating flooding, Florida is sending some help. Governor Ron DeSantis announcing yesterday that he's directed the Florida Division of Emergency Management to deploy resources. The state is sending three swift water rescue teams to assist with response and recovery. He says they're standing by to lend more help as requested. The Children's Movement of Florida founder David Lawrence says his twin granddaughters died in those Texas floods. The eight-year-olds were at Camp Mystic when the Guadalupe River rose on Friday. Lawrence tells the Miami Herald it's been an unimaginable time. A McDavid man has died after being hit by a vehicle while riding a lawnmower on Friday. That happened on Highway 29 near East Bogier Road. The 61-year-old was riding on the right side of the road when he was hit from behind by a woman in a sedan. The driver said she didn't see the lawnmower in time to stop. The lawnmower rider died at the scene of the crash. An investigation is ongoing. Senator Rick Scott accusing Cuba's government of pure evil. Senator Scott accused Cuba yesterday of beating and torturing opposition leader Jose Daniel Ferrer. Scott said reports that they pushed Ferrer to the brink of death are gut-wrenching, and he says Ferrer did nothing wrong and called the escalations outright abhorrent. It is 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. If you're on Highway 29 approaching 9 Mile, going southbound, just be aware that there's just some minor delays there. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. And right now, we've got 73 degrees, partly cloudy skies. 76 reported in Gulf Breeze, 75 in Milton. Our next news is at 7 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Dom Savino with Your Money Now. It's like Christmas in July for shoppers with Amazon's Prime Day event starting tomorrow, along with competing sales events from the likes of Walmart and Target. A new forecast from Adobe Analytics projects $23.8 billion in total online spending from Tuesday to Friday, with huge discounts on back-to-school gear ranging from apparel to electronics. President Trump and top officials are working to make trade deals as the reinstatement of country-by-country tariff rates looms. The tariffs are now set to go into effect August 1st. Investors had been expecting a restart this week at the end of Trump's initial 90-day negotiating window. The uncertainty has set Wall Street off to a poor start, with futures trading lower. That said, the market is coming off a winning week that saw the S&P 500 and NASDAQ close at all-time highs. One of the biggest losers in pre-market trading is Tesla. Shares are down 6% after Elon Musk announced plans to start a new political party. That's Your Money Now.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru. The men and women here at Anderson Subaru are committed to the Subaru Love Promise, a promise between us and our communities, a promise to make the Gulf Coast a better place to live, to work, and to play. And we're proud of what we've accomplished. From our ongoing support of the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association and Ascension Sacred Heart to volunteering with Feeding the Gulf Coast, we've conducted clothing drives for Loaves and Fishes and charity auctions for Gulf Coast Kids House, and we support Sherwood Elementary School in multiple ways. We're committed to the pets in our communities, too, by supporting dog adoption events with Phoenix Rising Rescue, Barktoberfest with Pensacola Humane Society, and Potty Gras with Wolfgang Park and Brews. And the love continues. Through donations, volunteering, and monetary support, Anderson Subaru is making a difference in the lives of our neighbors and our community. The Subaru Love Promise. That's a promise we intend to keep at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction Wednesday at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Blues at the Beach is back this weekend. On your way to the show, both Friday and Saturday, listen to News Radio 92.3 for traffic information and special programming from the beach, including the broadcast during the Blues Saturday performance. Don't forget your radios to hear the commentary of the show on News Radio 92.3. Find more events and submit yours at newsradio923.com.
Are you looking for the best news and talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 640 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News, and joining us now by phone, we have Hill Goodspeed, who is no longer the National Naval Aviation Museum historian. He has been promoted to being the deputy director, which still includes being mostly the historian. Hill, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. It's been a minute.
Good morning, Andrew. Yeah, it has been. Good to talk with you again.
Congratulations on the promotion, by the way. I literally didn't know until like 3 minutes ago. So that's fantastic. Hey, the reason I called you is because, and you and I had talked a little bit last week, is because there was an interesting anniversary. On last week, you had the 100th anniversary of the first Goodyear blimp, right?
Yes. And Goodyear has a long tie with naval aviation. And a lot of people don't know that the Navy operated blimps for many years. As a matter of fact, the first one the Navy ever bought was one called the DN-1, not built by Goodyear, and it actually made its only flights, which consisted of about one, I believe, before it crashed, here in Pensacola. So, you know, Pensacola has so many milestones in naval aviation history, and it was actually the location of the Navy's first ever blimp flight. So luckily, the ones built by Goodyear were a lot more successful and a lot longer serving in naval aviation.
So we had basically one here, which was not auspicious. that's fine. But the I think it was Thursday, am I right? It was the 3rd of July was the 100th anniversary of the first Goodyear blimp. Is that right?
I believe you're correct, yeah.
And the reason I wanted to talk to you was because as somebody who's a, you know, naval aviation enthusiast and is always sending me various information about things that happen and has said, Andrew, you should pay attention. This is kind of interesting. And I was like, the Goodyear blimp, why is that interesting? And he said, no, read the article. And I read the article and I was stunned to discover what something I kind of knew but had never really put, you know, 3 and 8 together to get 11. And in this case, I did. And I thought, oh, my God, we should definitely have you on to talk about this because blimps in naval aviation history, especially World War II, and, of course, we're a naval aviation history town, in World War II were massively important, right?
They absolutely were. And what the Navy did during World War II in the early stage, I mean, Goodyear really built blimps for the Navy and in the interwar years as well. So leading up to World War II, the Navy had a lot of experience operating blimps, free balloons, and also the dirigibles like the Hindenburg-type rigid airships, which operated in naval aviation in the 20s and 30s. They were not very successful because of accidents, but the actual blimps built by Goodyear were very active in World War II, and primarily it was, even though they operated on both the West Coast and the East Coast and into Central America, and there were also some bases overseas in French Morocco, actually. Huh. And what their primary role was anti-submarine warfare. And if anyone's familiar with World War II, the Battle of the Atlantic was a real test of the United States and Great Britain and other allies, the ability to get personnel and material across the Atlantic to support the campaigns in Europe. And, of course, crossing the Atlantic, they had to go through the onslaught of German U-boats. And one thing that really kept the U-boats at bay was air cover for the convoys. So if once the convoys got out of range of air cover, they became a lot more vulnerable to U-boats. But one thing about the blimps is that they could stay aloft much longer than conventional aircraft. So when you had blimps overflying the convoys, even though they couldn't, they weren't real effective at attacking U-boats, even though they carried depth charges, just the fact that they were there and were could see a wide range of water around the convoy, it offered a lot more reconnaissance that enabled the convoys to cross the Atlantic more successfully. So they were very, very important in that role, and there were base blimp bases scattered all over the place, and it was a really effective way to provide any submarine warfare for convoys.
So just because, again, this was news to me. It was interesting to me, and I think the scale of this program in American history is probably lost on some people. Am I right that we had upwards of 150 Goodyear-made blimps operating in support of naval aviation and support of primarily protecting shipping convoys during World War II? Am I in the right vicinity for the number?
Yes, absolutely are. It was, and they were all from the initial batch that they procured were the actual famous Goodyear blimps. There's one famous one I'll tell you about in a second. But then they procured them from Goodyear. And that's in those great numbers, and they endured. They built blimps for the Navy, and they operated into the 1960s. One of the more famous.
Hey, Hill, can you hang on? Hang on for just a second. Sure. We're talking to Hill Goodspeed. He's the deputy director of the Naval Aviation Museum. We'll come back to this in a second because I think it's fascinating. But I just got to take a quick break for traffic on the fives with John Pickens. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. All right, back to Hill Goodspeed. Sorry to interrupt you, sir. But you're telling me about there was one particular one?
Well, there's one particularly famous Goodyear blimp. It's called the L-8. And we actually have the control car for it at the museum, and it's popularly known as the Ghost Ship. It was procured by the Navy early on in World War II, and it was it performed a notable flight in April 1942 when the Doolittle Raiders left the West Coast Alameda to head out on board USS Hornet to head to bomb Japan. The L-8 actually flew out above and flew above Hornet and dropped vital supplies for that mission for the aircraft. And then later in August of 1942, the two-man crew flew out off the coast of California, and they reported seeing an oil slick, and they descended to check the oil slick out. And then that was the last radio communication from the airship. And next thing you know, in a little town called Daly City, California, this L-8 blimp descends and makes a crash landing in the middle of town, and there's no trace of the two men on board. And to this day, it's a mystery of what happened to them. And
weird.
So that control car for the Ghost Ship is on display in the museum.
I had no idea. I mean, I didn't know that history of the weirdness of the ending of it, but also its participation in the Doolittle Raid. I mean, it's one of the, you know, most, in my mind, significant early achievements of naval aviation to put those B-25s up on that, you know, straight deck and attack Japan to retaliate for Pearl Harbor and, you know, at least let them know that they were not invulnerable to us. That's amazing. I have questions about the operation, though. So for whatever reason in my brain, I think of a blimp as being tethered rather than flying independently. Were these blimps tethered with the ships, or did they accompany them and fly independently above them?
They flew independently.
Okay.
Now, early on, they were called free balloons, and those would be tethered to ships.
Okay.
But blimps like the Goodyear blimps operated independently. They would be when they were on land, they were either in a hangar or they had a nose cone that would be affixed to the nose of the airship envelope or the gas bag, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Sure.
And they would be moored to mooring masts. And then when they launched them, they would just be freed from those mooring masts, and then they would operate independently. So it was quite an operation to actually launch them. There are all sorts of videos on YouTube that you can see, historic films that the Navy produced. When they would descend, they'd have these lines that the crew would throw from them, from the control car and the there would be sailors on the ground who would grab those lines and bring the airship down, and then they would moor it to the mooring mast.
Yeah, I was just thinking how the term airship is a much more appropriate description for it, especially when you talk about launching and recovering. So they would travel the entire Atlantic over to England along with the convoys?
They could. They had the capacity to do that, sometimes they would just hand them over, to other aircraft. But they did have the ability to cross the Atlantic, and that's what they routinely did. Or in the case of the Caribbean, they would fly out over the Caribbean and cover the convoys for a certain period of time, and then return to their bases.
And my understanding is. My understanding was part of the advantage of them was very easy to resupply. Just the ships would carry the resupply. That they didn't need to, if you're trying to refuel planes, obviously, midair, this is a major logistical effort that we do these days. We didn't really have that capability back then. But, resupply them from the ship so they could basically go forever as long as they had ships that could help them. And then they would serve to protect the ships by being the eyes in the sky to look down. And like you say, and you tell me if I get any of this wrong. I'm just kind of talking it through in my head. But that they would be able to see submarines, which was enough of a deterrent to the submarines that they didn't want to be seen. They'd rather go where they can't be seen. And is it right that there were no ships lost that had airship cover? Is that right?
I've heard that before. I couldn't verify if it was totally accurate, but I have heard that statement before. But certainly you could say it was the risk was greatly diminished.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And visibility... it's not like they could really see the U-boats submerged, although later on the Goodyear blimps or the blimps built by Goodyear would carry pretty good sonar equipment and everything that they could detect submerged submarines.
Got it.
But, submarines created in World War II, they were very slow underwater, but they were a lot faster on the surface. So the U-boats would try to make approaches on the surface when they could, but when you have these airships overhead, they could detect them surfacing it would detract from their ability to close in on the convoys as quickly as they would have liked to.
Oh, okay. So that makes more sense, because I was trying to think, you can't really see that far down into the water, even from up above, especially if it's any kind of conditions. But if they're much more on the surface than they are submerged, that makes, because now you have a much greater visibility from up in the air looking across. So, no, just fascinating. And again, a whole slice of naval aviation history that I did not know. Are the men who served on these airships, are they historically considered naval aviators? Are they winged? Were they trained at NAS Pensacola? Tell me about that slice of it.
Yes, they were. The free balloon pilots for a period of time, it's sort of humorous, actually, they were awarded half wings, so they had the shield and the wing on the side, because their balloons were not necessarily powered.
Got it. Okay.
But the airship pilots went through a specialized training course. Primarily, in World War I, some of the first ones were actually trained in Akron, Ohio, where the Goodyear plant
sure,
was.
That makes sense.
But primarily, they were trained in Lakehurst, New Jersey. They were considered full-fledged naval aviators. Just you were either a naval aviator back then, a naval aviator HTA, which is heavier than air, which is a conventional aircraft, or you were a naval aviator LTA, which is lighter than air, and that would be those were the airship pilots. But yeah, they had full-fledged naval aviator wings, and they were definitely considered naval aviators.
And somebody said, I think it was Z is the designation for the squadrons that were for the lighter than air. Like H is for helicopters, V is for heavier than air, and Z for like Zeppelin is the lighter than air. Is that right?
That's correct. So most of the squadrons were ZP, which was airship patrol.
Interesting. No, it is absolutely fascinating. I didn't really know any of it, and that's why I wanted to have you on, because I figured people would find that a very interesting thing. Well, Hill Goodspeed, he is the deputy director of the Naval Aviation Museum. Oh, and you guys, just before we let you go, Hill, you've got a new exhibit coming, right? In August, is that right?
In September, we're planning on a formal opening in September in conjunction with POW MIA Day, and it's a brand new Vietnam prisoner of war exhibit, very interactive. It can walk through it, and it recreates the Hanoi Hilton down to original bricks and an original concrete slab bed. from the actual Hanoi Hilton in North Vietnam. A lot of reminiscences of POWs. And it's going to be something else, quite a tribute to those incredible Americans that endured so much in the prison camps of North Vietnam. So wow. Definitely that's our horizon this fall. Look for that to open at on board the air station at the museum.
Oh, wow. That sounds, amazing. I think the immersive kind of, like, there's a World War II museum. I'm trying to remember if it was the one in New Orleans or if it's a different one, but where you walk through the history of World War I and you walk through the history of, World War II. And that kind of experience is very interesting. And I imagine that will definitely give us a different perspective on what it would have meant to be a POW during Vietnam. I knew I had one last, a detail-y thing. Were they helium-filled or were they hydrogen-filled or were they something else? What were they in World War II?
They were helium.
Okay.
The famous Hindenburg crash.
Right.
They were filled with hydrogen. That was flammable. But the lighter than air, the blimps were helium filled.
Because that was a pretty, it was a relatively early development as they realized, well, we can't keep doing this with the hydrogen. So okay, I just wanted to make sure by World War II it had fixed. So very good. Well, Hill, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate you being available and always such good information. Hill Goodspeed, former historian and now deputy director / historian for the Naval Aviation Museum. Sir, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew. Enjoyed it. Have a great day.
Absolutely. John Pickens has got traffic on thighs. John, did you know any of that?
No.
Isn't that amazing?
I was just mind blown.
I know.
Wow.
The history of the importance of the Goodyear blimp, not just for covering the Olympics or a football game.
Or a football game.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Not seeing any delays around our area. 90, 98 are all flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Join Kenny Chartel from Affordable Automotive Gulf Breeze for car care tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Kenny will be sharing his years of expertise on car maintenance, as well as tips and loads of great advice that'll keep your car running in top shape. Whether foreign or domestic, don't miss car care tomorrow at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Bands on the Beach is presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority and happens every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Come on out and bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, it's Vinyl Revival. They're a six-piece band covering hits from the 70s through the 90s from Pat Benatar, Blondie, The Cars, The Cure, Journey, AC/DC, The Doobie Brothers, and The B-52s. Catch it all at Bands on the Beach with Vinyl Revival. Just remember, no pets or glass allowed.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
The Blue Angels are flying to Pensacola Beach this week, and on Friday and Saturday at 2 p.m., you can catch the live narration right here on News Radio 92.3.
It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
All right, I do have to say one last thing about the Goodyear blimp thing. This is going to make me look stupid, but I do not care. It's just true. You know the Goodyear logo, the symbol?
Right.
The winged foot of Hermes or whatever, mm-hmm. Whenever I see that, that is not what I see. What I see is a gas pump handle.
A gas pump handle?
Look at it again, and for my whole life, that's what I see. And once your brain thinks that's what it is, that's what you see, I have to remind myself that it's the winged foot of... the messenger god. and because it doesn't look like that to me. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David, look at it again. Look it up. That's it. You'll see. I'm not that crazy. Go ahead, David.
Good morning. Flash flooding is devastating Central Texas. At least 81 people are dead. Dozens still missing. Rescue operations do continue today, including near that girls' camp along the Guadalupe River. There's still 10 children unaccounted for there. President Trump has signed a major disaster declaration and plans to visit the region late this week. Moviegoers packed theaters across the nation. Jurassic World Rebirth dominated the box office over the weekend. They made a $91.5 million debut. And new study out, Andrew, showing that sleeping with the lights on may increase the chances of heart disease. This is a study out of Australia. Researchers found that people who slept near bright lights had the highest risk of heart failure, heart attacks, and stroke.
Well, it's very important to remember that the Mogwai does not like bright lights.
Bright light, bright light.
Does it look like a gas pump handle?
No!
Look again.
You're listening to